Welcome back to the Next Big Thing podcast. I'm your host, Sam Ogborn. So let's kick today's podcast episode off with a question. Do you consider yourself to be a negotiator? And when I'm talking about negotiation, I'm not just talking about salary negotiation, which is usually where everyone's heads go. Today, we have Donna Hughes, the founder of Launch Negotiation, on the podcast. Donna and I actually first met on Instagram when I had started my marketing firm's Instagram account. Immediately, Donna and I started DMing back and forth about marketing and business and negotiation, and she really opened my eyes to the fact that negotiation is so much broader than what everyone thinks that it is. The truth of the matter is we negotiate in our everyday lives. Think about during COVID, how you've been a negotiator, maybe at home with your family, you're negotiating desk space, or maybe you're negotiating what you're gonna eat for dinner, or maybe you're even negotiating wearing a face mask. I hope that's not a negotiation, but it might be. Point being, in this podcast, Donna's gonna talk about everything from salary negotiations to negotiating with a wedding photographer or negotiating and feeling empowered in your everyday life. She really hits on every aspect of negotiation and how we face it more frequently than we think. Also, how negotiation can be a tool for us and make us feel really empowered instead of feeling like a burden or having it make us nervous when it comes time to things like salary negotiations. If you don't see yourself as a negotiator, regardless of your age, today's podcast is perfect for you. If you do see yourself as a negotiator, maybe it's time to expand your thinking to negotiating more than just what you typically think of as negotiation. So with that said, I think everyone can really benefit from listening to today's episode. Let's dive in and I'll catch you on the flip side. Hey, Donna, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, how you doing, Sam?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Very good.
Love it. Well, I am so excited to interview you today and have you on the podcast because I know you as the launch negotiation queen. Can you give our listeners a little bit more of an understanding as to what launch negotiation is?
Absolutely. So Launch Negotiation, we're a leading global consultancy and we deliver world-class negotiation skills training all across Europe and North America. And in a nutshell, our mission is to empower you to see yourself as a negotiator. So we partner with organizations and individuals that aspire to tap into that innate negotiation potential. And so we deliver these workshops that really engage, educate, and empower you to harness that innate negotiation potential and also drive your own business profitability and performance.
So cool. I'd love for listeners to understand, how does someone get into negotiation as a career?
Great question. So as you may detect from my accent, I was born and raised in England. I actually studied business management, but then went on to qualify as a chartered management accountant and spent a decade working in supply chain management in the energy sector. And it was when I was in the energy sector that I had the opportunity to first do a negotiation course. Fast forward to kind of autumn 2018, I relocated to Canada, found the courage to pursue my lifelong dream of starting my own business, which was really to empower others as well, and founded Launch Negotiation. Now, back in my time in the energy sector, I trained in negotiation, but I didn't really see myself as a negotiator. I didn't resonate with the dominant image in the media of what a negotiator looks like. And by that, you know, namely cis white male. If you go to an episode of The Apprentice, that's the image that tends to come up when we think of negotiator. But later I went on to compete in a international negotiation competition. And we went on to win that competition. And it was the first time that I really looked at myself as a negotiator and saw myself as having some potential in this field. So I started to really immerse myself in the art and psychology of negotiation. I started to, you know, delve into what is negotiation, what does a negotiator look like, and really explore why so many of us don't see ourselves as negotiators. And really that's, you know, what drove me to create Launch is I recognized this tremendous potential, but I you know, it was a decade later, in all honesty, I wish I'd have had it at the very beginning of my career. As soon as I saw myself as a negotiator, as soon as I saw life as negotiable, I was able to transform my life. So I started using and viewing life through the lens of negotiation. and it transformed my life. I negotiated, you know, a 25% pay increase. I negotiated with my wedding vendors to halve the cost of my wedding, and I generated over $5 million in savings for the businesses I negotiated with. So for me, you know, my passion going forward is really to share that with other women in the world and show them that they are negotiators and how they can embrace negotiation within their own lives.
Okay, so I'm pretty sure everyone listening is going to be like, where do I sign up for that and how can I save that amount of money? So, incredible story. I think our listeners are going to love this episode just because it's shifting their perspective as to what negotiation actually means. So, in your words, Donna, how would you describe negotiation? Because you and I have chatted about how negotiation at first is interpreted as salary negotiation when really the spectrum is a lot broader than that.
That's a really great question. You know, in my eyes, I think you're completely right in terms of the media portrayal. It tends to be very much focused on salary negotiations or vendor negotiations or house negotiations. And there tends to be this one dominant type of negotiation in the media. It tends to be this hard bargaining approach where you're having to haggle relentlessly and, you know, slam your fist on the table to get the lowest price. But really, you know, negotiation is so much bigger than that. In reality, negotiation, it transcends all aspects of our lives. Each and every day we negotiate. We negotiate with our colleagues, our clients, our suppliers, our family, our friends, our children, even our pets. So, you know, in my eyes, negotiation, it's such a broad definition. It's simply a conversation aimed at reaching an agreement. And these are conversations that we're having every single day. You know, for example, whether deciding with your partner what you're going to eat for dinner or who's going to cook dinner, or negotiating with work, you know, a different deadline, either earlier or later, or even, you know, at the moment during COVID, if you're working from home with a partner, negotiating which room you're going to use as your home office. These are all negotiations. It's just often we don't see them that way. And for me, you know, one of the reasons why it's so important to think broadly and openly about negotiation is when you do so, the world is your oyster. Everything's negotiable. And that's really why I try and encourage as many people as possible to think broadly about negotiation, challenge those assumptions, and try and recognize all the opportunities you have to negotiate in your life. For a lot of people, negotiation is really far outside their comfort zone, myself included. But you have to do it because it's so important to not leave value on the table. So if you can start to prime your mind to recognize all the opportunities for negotiation in your daily life, even when the stakes are really small in terms of what you're having for dinner, then suddenly when the stakes are that much higher, when it's salary negotiations or house negotiations, that's when you're going to have that confidence and that competence to embrace those negotiations. And you can really transform your life by doing so.
Okay, raise your hand if you've experienced a desk negotiation during COVID. Like, that's got to be 95% of listeners, if not more. So, out of curiosity, beyond what you just talked about, which is such good context for what negotiation actually is, are there any other weird or unexpected instances of what negotiation could look like?
Absolutely. And, I'd really encourage you to think as broadly as possible. And, you know, some of the best negotiators I've ever come across are children, because they view life through the lens of negotiation. And if there's any parents or aunties or uncles or grandparents out there, you'll know exactly what I mean. You know, whether it's negotiating a later bedtime, 5 extra minutes on the swing, 1 less spoonful of broccoli, children view life as negotiation and they embrace every opportunity. But, you know, as adults, we still have just as many opportunities to negotiate. So, you know, a negotiation could be deciding in your household who's going to take on what chores, or who's going to cut the grass, or who's going to do the dishes. It could be deciding if you're going out on a date, where you're going for date night, who's going to do the starter and main, how you're going to split the bill. It could be even reaching an agreement on your household monthly budget. You know, where do you want to put your savings towards? How much are you planning to save? In terms of, you know, when we think of a financial view, it could be negotiating the rate of your car insurance, your cell phone bill, your loan interest. The opportunities are endless. I've mentioned, you know, wedding negotiations, I've mentioned salary negotiations, but really throughout our life, you know, look around the room and, you know, Sam, feel free to throw your thoughts as well. You know, life is a negotiation. It's just recognizing that it is that's so important.
Yeah, I actually negotiate with my dog every single morning. He always wants to go a certain direction and then I have to pull him, and he's so freaking stubborn that I have to like pull him in a certain direction And it just ends up being a thing like every single morning. So yeah, I end up negotiating with my dog. And then sometimes I feel like negotiating even for something as simple as whether or not I want to get on video chat. I think that's also something that a lot of us can experience and relate to right now, because negotiations actually happening in these little moments in our day, we're just not packaging it that way.
Exactly. And the more you can kind of see it in that light, the suddenly, you know, negotiation, it's not half as daunting. It's not half as terrifying when you think, oh, I'm having that conversation with my Labrador, or I'm having that conversation with my partner. It's recognizing that these are conversations we're using every day. And certainly, you know, some conversations you won't need to prepare for as much, but, you know, the more you can embrace it, the more you can recognize these opportunities in your life, the greater the potential you have to really capitalize on negotiations when the stakes are highest.
Just out of curiosity, when I was growing up, I thought of negotiation as like you were on the debate team, but negotiation wasn't really something that was taught in schools growing up. Do you find that you have to almost shift people's minds of what negotiation actually is because they don't have that foundation?
Absolutely. And I mean, there's, you know, a whole separate conversation, Sam, would be in terms of the gender schema, in terms of, you know, especially girls and boys, we're socialized very differently from a young age. And there's been kind of countless studies that show that men view life as far more negotiable than women do. And so often, you know, when we do actually find the courage to negotiate, we often even ask for less than men would in the same situation. And so, you know, definitely, I think there's an absence of it in the curriculum. And I think it's so important, because, you know, everyone benefits when there's equality. It's not, you know, with feminism, men have to be involved in the solution, but also men will benefit too. So I think it's really important to raise awareness. And, you know, when I'm having these conversations about negotiation and when I'm running my workshops, one of the greatest messages I want to send people is think about who's watching you and who's watching you make these decisions, who's watching you negotiate, because you have the opportunity to inspire future generations. Whether you're a mother, whether you're an auntie, whatever role that you are, and the people in your life, you know, you will be a brother or sister, a mother or a father, so many different roles. And if you can be open and transparent about your negotiations, if you can share your experiences about negotiating your salary or negotiating for your house or negotiating on a day-to-day basis, you have the power to empower other people that you really care about to do the same. And I think that, in my opinion, is a huge part. This transparency, having these open conversations about negotiation, are really important in terms of breaking some of these traditional stereotypes about what negotiation is and what a negotiator looks like.
So good. I am loving everything about this episode right now. I feel like I'm learning so much. What about a moment in time when you've negotiated something that you felt really proud of?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, for me, I've recently become a business owner. And for me, something that's very important is preserving work-life balance. So a negotiation I'd say I'm really proud of is having that unwavering commitment to negotiating with myself, negotiating boundaries and negotiating the time that I'm going to make for my work, but also for my friends and my family. And that can be anything from, you know, rearranging the times of meetings to make sure that they fit in with my schedule and they don't compromise my work-life balance. But also, you know, but prior to COVID, it was in terms of traveling as well, making sure that, you know, I take into account the travel time and what impact that's going to have on my own life. You know, nowadays it could be as simple as just going for an audio as opposed to a video Zoom call, you know, just allowing that bit of time for myself so that you can let the boundaries down a bit more. So negotiating myself is, it's an ongoing process, and I encourage everyone to do it. It's not selfish. It's that kind of pull the life mask over your own face before you give it to someone else. It's looking after yourself to make sure you can be the best version of yourself to empower the other people in your life.
Everything you say, Donna, it's like one thing after another. It's so valuable. It's just great. Pivoting a little bit into salary negotiation specifically, because I know that that's what a lot of listeners associate with negotiation or have previously associated with negotiation. I actually have a funny story about this. My parents will never let me live this down, and I know that they're going to be listening to this, and it's fine. I would like to let it go, but whatever. Back when I was graduating college, we were still coming off of the recession here in the U.S., and I was so elated to get a job offer from an advertising agency in Chicago. Like, could not wait. Was like so excited that when I got the call from my future boss, She offered me the job and I accepted without asking for the salary. And looking back, I'm just like, oh my God, I can't believe I missed that. But in the moment, I was so nervous and so excited that I didn't even think about it. And then it got kind of awkward when it came to negotiation, because then it kind of, you know, I already accepted the job. It's funny now, looking back on that moment, I just laugh at it. And I feel so much more empowered making negotiation decisions and going into negotiations. Like, I actually look forward to negotiating, but I know that that's not the case for a lot of women out there. So when we're talking about salary negotiations, as it relates to women specifically, what kind of feedback and tips would you have for them?
I think that's a really great question. And it's like you said, on a lot of people's minds. And I really appreciate, Sam, you sharing that example of you not negotiating out of university. And so many of us don't. You know, there's a fantastic book by two incredible female pioneers in the field of negotiation, Linda Babcock and Sarah Lashever. And it's called Why Women Don't Ask. And this is just an absolute phenomenal book, which explores the kind of psychology and how we're socialized at a very young age, just to really say thank you and nod our heads and take the offer and walk away without challenging it. And, you know, this carries on. We see these examples very early on in our life, and it carries on as we become women. And, you know, still nowadays, men are 4 times more likely to ask for a salary increase than women are. And, you know, I'd encourage any women listening on this podcast, and even men too, to have these conversations with the other women and men in your life and really understand that statistic, see how it comes to life when you're talking to your brothers or your sisters and your friends and your family members. See, have they ever negotiated their salary? And if so, how did it work out? Even ask them, you know, how did you prepare for it? And did it go to plan? I think a huge concern for a lot of women is how you'll be perceived when you go for a salary negotiation. And that is entirely understandable, especially in the current climate. But I think it's really important that you recognize that you need to ask. It's really essential. Even going back to that university age, a lot of us don't think to negotiate because we've got very little experience in the workplace at that point. But, you know, time and time again, studies are showing anywhere from a 7% to 10% pay difference between the starting salaries of male graduates versus female graduates as a result of male graduates negotiating their salary. And, you know, this impact, even at a graduate level, it compounds over the years. And there's been estimates it can come from anywhere from $1 million to $1.5 million of lost income over the course of our career. So it's huge. So that's my case for this is why you have to go for it. I know it's scary. I know it's outside your comfort zone, but you're standing up not just for yourself, but for all other women. So this is why you have to do it. But in terms of approaching it, that is a great question. And, you know, I'd like to go into a longer answer, but I'd say in terms of the highlights, the first one I'd say is know your worth. I touched on it earlier. Often when we do find the courage to negotiate, we really undersell ourselves. We really underestimate our own worth in the marketplace. So the best way to kind of get an objective assessment of your worth is to reach out to headhunters, to reach out to recruitment consultants, and look at the advertisements for similar positions on LinkedIn, Monster, Indeed, any type of recruitment website, and start to recognize what a competitive remuneration package would be for the role that you're going for or the role that you're trying to get promoted to. Recognize that so that you have that objective sense of worth. And you know, especially if you do have more qualifications than the average offering, build that in as well. Recognize that. You know, that objective sense of worth is really important because it gives you the confidence when you do go to negotiate to know that what you're asking for is reasonable. It's definitely within the realms of reality because you know other people and other companies are being offering these packages. The second thing I'd say is, you know, we often focus on salary negotiations. We just hone in on the salary, and that's definitely important. But there's so many other aspects of your remuneration package that are really important to you. So, you know, I would say take a second to think about, aside from salary, what are the most important things, components of your salary package? It could be anything such as ongoing professional development or, you know, study leave. If you're studying for a professional accreditation, it could be flexible working hours, pension contributions, health coverage, health insurance for yourself and your family. dental insurance for yourself and your family, a sabbatical, a paid sabbatical, extra days leave. It really could be any of these things. Just think about, for you personally, what is the most important thing? And I'd probably try and narrow that down to probably about three items that are the top of your list. And that's your kind of backup plan, that if they can't meet you where you want to get on your salary negotiation, you've got these other things that you can carry on the conversation with, so you don't just reach a stalemate. You can say, I understand you can't reach this right now, but what about if we start exploring flexible working or a paid sabbatical or whatever of those components are important to you? And then, you know, the final thing I'd say is, you know, once you've done your research, you know your worth, once you've planned how you're going to approach the conversation, definitely practice at home, practice with loved ones that are going to be able to give you that honest feedback and say, you know what, when you stared me in the eyes from 2 centimeters apart, it was quite intimidating. You know, get that real honest, raw feedback on how you're presenting yourself, how you've structured the conversation, and then, you know, practice it until you feel confident. And then when you do, schedule that meeting with your manager, lay the expectations for that meeting so they know going into that conversation and they can do their own preparation. And that's where I go for it. In terms of, you know, there's two situations here, I guess. It's whether you're getting offered a job for the first time, you don't have to schedule that meeting with your manager. Instead, when a company gives you the offer, say thank you very much, ask for a couple of days, and then go back. One thing I would say is, often when we get in a situation, we're so happy just to get the job, we forget to negotiate. And so there can be times where, you know, say if we're going for a job and our salary expectation was $60,000 and the offer that comes on the table is $75,000. There's many situations like that where the offer is so much higher than what you're expecting. You know, you lose all composure and you just, you know, shake their hand and sign the deal straight there and then. But what I would say is, firms most of the time are expecting you to negotiate back. So even if they've offered you $75,000, maintain your composure and say, you know, that's a fantastic offer and I really would like to work at this company, but I was really looking for something closer to, and say whatever the range is there. Firms are, as I said, most of the time expecting you to negotiate back. And if you think of it from the manager's perspective, they want to make sure that they're presenting a reasonable offer as well. So if you just kind of snatch that first offer that they give to you, it could raise concerns for them that, oh gosh, did I go in too high? Maybe they're not, you know, justifiable for this salary. Maybe I should have gone in at 65 or 60. So it's about recognizing that the manager on the other side of the table also wants to feel like they've done a really good job, that they've assessed your worth effectively. And a really good way to do that is when you are negotiating back. In that example, if you know you got offered, say, 75 and you went back and counted 80, it could be really satisfying for the manager to bring you back down to, say, 77 and say, you know, it was slightly above my original offer, but I managed to bring them down from where they were. So, you know, I think for a lot of us, we view negotiations as just take situations, but they really can be an opportunity to generate value for both sides of the table. They don't have to be this kind of arm wrestle or battle. It can be a really enjoyable experience. And, you know, it was really nice to hear, Sam, that you mentioned how for yourself, you know, you actually get excited about salary negotiations. And, you know, that's what the stage I want us to get to, where we're recognizing negotiations as an enjoyable experience, an experience where you can collaborate and an experience where you can generate sustainable value for both parties either side the table.
Completely. I also don't know how it is in Canada, but at least here in the States, I think in some states it's actually illegal for you to you don't have to actually disclose what your current salary is. And that's a good thing because, I mean, the roles and responsibilities of the new job are different than your old job. So it really almost doesn't feel fair to base your current salary on a future job salary because everything could be different. It's really understanding and knowing your worth.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, I think that's the problem when we focus on our previous salary. And it's, you know, I think it's great that a lot of states are starting to remove that so firms can't ask you. What I would say is just make sure you're not using that as your benchmark. That's not an indication of your worth because, you know, in my opinion, when it comes to going for jobs, whether it's a promotion or a new role, you're often going to seek professional development. You're going to really challenge yourself. So the new role that you're going for is going to have a really different level of role and responsibilities than your current position. And so it really is like comparing apples and pears. And you can really undersell yourself if you're benchmarking against your existing salary. That really should bear no relation to where you're going forward. The only thing I would say is when you're going for a new job or you're going for a salary negotiation, always bear in mind what's called your BATNA, which is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. So if you can't reach an agreement in the negotiation, what is your backup plan? So that is the only context where I'd say think about your existing salary. If that is important to you, definitely make sure you don't go beneath that. But aside from that, make sure that you're benchmarking yourself against, as I said, the research that you're doing on the industry to make sure you are getting competitively paid for the new role you're going for. It's highly likely your existing role is going to have less responsibility than the one that you're striving for.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Moving beyond corporate negotiation, which I think a lot of people might think of corporate negotiation as maybe like a little slimy, because companies have the backing and the money to be able to shell out to salaries. What about if someone's negotiating with a small business owner, like let's say a wedding photographer, going back to that example, and maybe they have a little bit of guilt around negotiating with someone who this is like their bread and butter, or this is how they make their money. If we're using the example of a wedding photographer, what's a way that someone can negotiate without almost like devaluing their services?
I think that's a great question. And, you know, completely in terms of the you know, ethics here, I think absolutely you want to make sure that both people are gaining from a negotiation. And, you know, earlier in the conversation, I mentioned about how when we think of negotiation, often our mind goes this very aggressive sometimes approach of hard bargaining, where you're just negotiating on one variable. You just want the lowest cost. But in reality, when I think of negotiations, most of them are multifaceted. Almost every negotiation has many dimensions to it. So the more openly and creatively you can think about the negotiation, the better. So what I would say in terms of any negotiation that you go into, you always want to think about your objective. You always want to think about your BATNA, the best alternative to a negotiated agreement. But you also want to think about what are all the variables that could matter to either me or the other party. So in, you know, for example, a small business like a wedding photographer, for something that you might be able to offer them is great exposure. So you might be able to say, you know what, I actually have five other friends that are going for a wedding. You know, if we were all to go with you, could we negotiate a rate for all of us? Or you could say, for example, you know, I've got a really large social media following. I would love to share your photographs on social media and tag you in or be included in your portfolio. I would love to leave you a testimonial. There's all these different elements that you can provide which would really help boost their business. And that return on investment for them would be much more effective in terms of a client testimonial rather than just paying for an advertisement. You know, we know the importance of social proof. We know that, especially nowadays, social media is such a powerful platform that often, particularly millennial purchasers, want to hear the advocacy from their peers. And so I think it's recognizing what can you offer them in return. It's not just about taking and getting the lowest price, but it's what else can you offer them? And I think, you know, when you enter a negotiation, viewing it as an opportunity for collaboration, as an opportunity to create sustainable value for both of you, that's when you're really going to maximize the outcome of them. Because you're not just viewing it from a perspective of what do I want, but you're working together to see how you can both support each other and create the most value. So I think it's worth having consideration about those variables, but also having a real open conversation with the person on the other side of the table. You know, really embracing active listening. And by active listening, I mean really immersing yourself in what they're saying, picking up on the verbal and nonverbal communication, and, you know, making sure that you're expressing empathy, you're taking time to understand what is important to them. And then when you're talking about this proposed collaboration or how you can create a package that works for both of you, you're both going to be on the same page, or at least you both understand each other's perspectives.
So Donna, you mentioned nonverbal and verbal. So let's say someone is negotiating a job offer. Do you think it helps them get a leg up if they go beyond just writing back and forth with an email to then hopping on like maybe a video call or a phone call?
I definitely think it would help. I think when it's via email, there's so much scope for miscommunication. It's very difficult to detect a tone, and especially if it is on a sensitive subject where you're trying to perhaps negotiate a lower rate or, you know, greater hours for them to be there for the day. That is, you know, something definitely to bear in mind. So I would say, you know, if you can make it more personal, if you can give yourself more opportunities to see how they're doing, to see their facial emotions when you're, you know, asking for something, I definitely think that's an advantage. And, you know, at the end of the day, whenever you're negotiating, we often think of it as, you know, me negotiating versus this huge company. But in reality, it's just you negotiating with a person. It's always just a person on the other side of the table or a number of people. And so the more personal you can make it, the more you can make them feel comfortable. Absolutely, the better you can negotiate.
Yeah, it almost helps you disarm the conversation a little bit more. Like on the other end of the table, there's a person just like you.
Exactly. And, you know, when you're having those conversations, as we know of emails, they can disrupt us and, you know, you can get frustrated receiving an email and, you know, they didn't know what you were doing at that time. You know, they certainly didn't expect to receive an email from you. Whereas if it's a phone call or, you know, a Zoom call, that's scheduled in. So they're already kind of primed for this type of conversation. They've already got that hat on and they're ready to talk to you. Whereas at the moment, you know, an email could be particularly disruptive and you could get a harsh or shut down response because the timing of the email isn't right, even though you had no idea what was going on in their life at that exact moment that they opened the email.
Mm-hmm. Completely. I think we've all been in situations where we're emailing with someone back and forth and we're just not getting the answer that we need to be getting. So picking up the phone and calling someone works really well. Actually, one of my former bosses, she always recommended to just pick up the phone and call someone. It gets things done so much more quickly. I want to switch topics to discuss women and negotiating. I think there's a lot of women who are listening to this podcast who may not think of themselves as negotiators when it comes to simple things like their relationship or maybe at work. What is your advice for getting women to see themselves more frequently as negotiators in their everyday lives?
Absolutely. Well, short of bursting into an 80s ballad, you've got the power. Rest assured, you know, regardless of whether you see yourself or not, you are a negotiator. And really, you know, for me through launch, what I'm trying to do is I'm striving to make negotiation accessible for everyone. And I do this by really challenging the stereotype of what negotiation is and what a negotiator looks like. And I'd encourage everyone that's listening to this call, again, just to take a second to think about what are the first images that jump to your mind when you think of a negotiator? What is the profile of that person? And also take the time to reflect, do you resonate in any way with that demographic that came to your mind? And if you don't, then it's time to think more broadly about negotiation. It's time to recognize everyday conversations as negotiations. You know, I mentioned earlier in the call that the way that I define negotiation, it's just a conversation aimed at reaching an agreement. So think about that definition and really start to look through your life every single day. Try and spot, say, 5 opportunities to negotiate. They will be there. You'll just have to, again, think as broadly as you can about the conversations you're having and whether you are both trying to agree on reaching a certain conclusion. We do negotiate every single day, whether you realize it or not, you are a negotiator and you are negotiating every single day. One thing I would say in terms of for women to start to see themselves as negotiators, join me on Instagram. So each week at LaunchNeg, what I do is I showcase a different woman from around the world and the series is called This Is What a Negotiator Looks Like. And we showcase incredible women from scientists to pharmacists, finance managers to entrepreneurs, money coaches to authors. And we show how these women are using negotiation in their lives. And, you know, what I really enjoy each week when I publish these posts is the amount of feedback that people provide saying, you know, I never knew you could negotiate this, or I never knew this was a negotiation. So I think the more you can expose yourself to sources that challenge the dominant media portrayal of what a negotiator looks like, the more you can recognize that you look just like that woman, or you have a scenario that's just like that situation that you can negotiate in, the more that you can recognize that you are a negotiator.
I also love that series as well because it really opens your eyes to the different ways that people negotiate in their everyday lives. So it's almost like generating ideas for people of, oh, I do that every day. I just didn't actually think that that was a negotiation. So quick question for you on negotiating. A lot of people might see negotiation as non-emotional, or maybe to be really effective, you have to be less emotional. In your opinion, do you feel like negotiators are more effective when they're less emotional, or is emotion a powerful part of being an effective negotiator?
Really great question. And, you know, this is one I get asked quite often. And again, I think it stems from, you know, when you think the media portrayal of negotiator, it's often very cold. It's very emotionless. It's very, very, I'd say cold is the main term that comes to mind. But what I would say, certainly for myself and for a lot of negotiators around the world, the most powerful tool you can leverage is emotional intelligence. Now, that might not, not be the first thing that you think of, but it really is a really powerful tool in negotiation, because negotiations, they're just conversations. And to have a really effective conversation, it's important that you have that emotional intelligence. You have that awareness of your own emotions and also others' emotions and how those are changing throughout the conversation. So I would say emotions aren't a bad thing. It's worth recognizing the impact those emotions are having in the negotiation that you're trying, what you're trying to achieve. So it's certainly important to have the awareness of the emotions. It's certainly important to recognize the impact they're having on your ability to optimize the outcome of the negotiation. But I wouldn't say emotions in themselves are a weakness. Again, negotiations, they happen with people. You're just negotiating with a person on the other side of the table. And, if they're showing emotions, if you're very composed in your response, that can be quite challenging, and it's going to set a different energy in the room. One thing I would say is the most dangerous thing to have in a negotiation is your ego, and that can often come through a lot in a variety of different emotions. But the reason egos are so dangerous and so derailing is because they often throw rational decision making out the window. And, I'm sure many of us can draw upon examples of when we've seen an ego in a conversation or in a negotiation, and it really just disrupts things. So I would say emotions aren't a bad thing. Egos are when it comes to negotiation.
Yeah, that makes sense. So for people who want to become a negotiator after listening to this podcast, they're feeling inspired like I am right now. What are ways that people can become a negotiator and be aware that they are a negotiator today?
Or reach out to me, because I love people saying, I'm a negotiator. I've realized it. That's one of my favorite emails or messages to get. So definitely reach out to me. But I would say, recognize that if it is outside your comfort zone, that's entirely understandable. For a lot of people, negotiation is outside our comfort zone. You're not alone. But recognize that you are a negotiator, even if you don't see yourself that way. And by just taking that first step and recognizing that you can negotiate in your life, you're going to start transforming your life in so many different ways. So that first most important step is to actually take the plunge and to negotiate. Now, of course, I do want to mention we run interactive workshops, and they are purely focused on engaging, educating and empowering you to harness this innate negotiation potential. So during our workshops, what I really focus on is redefining negotiation. And by redefining negotiation, I'm talking about defining it in your own terms, in your own life. How can you use negotiation as a mother, as a sister, as a leader, in the different roles that you hold? How can you drive negotiation in your life? And I must say, the thing that follows the course, I have a 12-month coaching program, and I hold you accountable, because I want to see that the skills that you've been given and the skills that we talk through and the rehearsals that you've done, you actually apply those in your life. So the 12-month coaching that follows, we go on a journey as a group, and we set targets during the course on how you're going to apply negotiation in your life. And then during that 12-month coaching program, I will follow up with you and say, how's it going? How's that salary negotiation going? Or how's that vendor negotiation going? And make sure that you achieve the outcome that you set out for. The most important step you can do in terms of improving your confidence is just taking that plunge. It's seeing that you are a negotiator. It's recognizing the opportunities to negotiate in your life, and it's taking the plunge and negotiating.
Love it. It's an everyday process and habit. So you mentioned workshops where people can work with you. Are there other ways that you offer your services to partner with people who want to learn more about negotiation?
So you can find us at www.launchnegotiation.com. And we do a variety of different workshops. So we have two main ones at the moment. One of them is individual. So that would be if you want to sign up as an individual and it was hosted outside of your organization. Your organization might be paying for the workshop, but they're not hosting it. So that would be a workshop where it could be people from all different industries participating. And those types of individual negotiation workshops, we start to talk about salary negotiations alongside, client negotiations and vendor negotiations. The other type of workshop that we do is a organizational workshop. So that's where we come into your organization, and that can be virtually. We come into your organization and we have a conversation about what are your business's priorities, what are your key performance indicators, and how can you use negotiation to optimize the outcomes of your stakeholder negotiations. So when we talk about that 12-month plan when it comes to an organizational negotiation, I'm talking about setting goals that are going to achieve your organization's KPIs and making sure that you are accountable for having that direct return on investment from your time spent in these negotiation workshops. So, you know, I would love to hear from any listeners that are keen to learn more about how they can tap into that innate negotiation potential. So you can reach me at donna@launchnegotiation.com. You can also connect to us on Instagram or Twitter at LaunchNeg, and please check out our website, www.launchnegotiation.com.
And that's LaunchNeg, N-E-G, correct?
That is right.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Donna, for your time and your advice for people who are listening. I think you probably changed a lot of people's perspectives on what negotiation actually does look like, and also empowered people who are listening to be able to apply it in their daily lives. So I absolutely love having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. And I think people will have to catch you on Instagram to learn more.
Thank you so much, Sam. I really appreciate it. And final mission to everyone. You're a negotiator. Go for it.
Exactly. I love that. So how incredible was that podcast? Thank you so much, Donna. You're phenomenal, and we're so grateful to have you on the podcast. As always, we love our podcast guests. They've taught us so much. So thanks, Donna, for stopping by. Everyone, please make sure to go follow Launch Negotiation on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. They have so many great tips. And like we were talking about, Donna's series called This Is What a Negotiator Looks Like is actually very eye-opening. So definitely go check that out. And the biggest takeaway that I hope you have from today is that you are a negotiator. Feel empowered the next time you step into a negotiation, whether it's at home or at work. You've got this. You're a negotiator. You have the power, like Donna said. So as usual, I'll make sure to leave the links in the show notes, and feel free to let us know what you loved about this podcast, maybe some takeaways that you had. Feel free to DM us, or you can mention us on Instagram, tag us in your stories. Would love to know what you found valuable. And as always, you guys know the drill. Please make sure to send us a DM if you have suggestions for us on this podcast, recommendations. We are all ears and we love the feedback. So thank you once again for tuning in to The Next Big Thing. I'll catch you in the next episode.